Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities, all you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Welcome, this is Eric. This is brother Jay. And tonight we're going to talk about the next presidential movie on our calendar, Oliver Stone's 1995 classic, Nixon.
Remember, kids. Dick Nixon before he dicks you.
So this is actually the second Richard Nixon movie we've talked about. The first being All the President's Men.
Yes.
This one, though, is just a more straight-up biopic, kind of, I guess.
It's an Oliver Stonification.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I guess that should be always the disclaimer. Like, I think I can honestly say I like Oliver Stone movies, but don't go to a presidential Oliver Stone movie expecting it to be a documentary.
Oh, no. It is as far from a documentary as All the President's Men is close to a documentary.
Well, liberties were taken.
Many liberties were taken.
So this is on your list because it's our list of presidential movies. I didn't realize our President's Month was going to be full of Oliver Stone movies.
Nor did I.
Yeah. Because W, also Oliver Stone.
Yeah.
JFK, also Oliver Stone.
Yeah.
Pretty much the only one that's not is LBJ. Who directed LBJ?
I don't know. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. Anyway, this is on your list.
It is.
And so tell me your initial thoughts. Had you seen this movie before?
I originally saw this movie. I did not see it until I had moved to Portland. I had a strange and sad ritual. When I moved into the house where I shared with one other person, had one roommate, I had basically an attic upstairs all to myself, and he kind of had the downstairs to himself. So I had this ritual where I would come home on a Friday night from work, and I would usually, this is really kind of shameful, but I would like order a pizza and breadsticks and soda from Pizza Hut. And then I would stop at like Blockbuster, except it wasn't Blockbuster, it was Hollywood Video, and get a couple DVDs and bring them home and watch them and then return them over the weekend, do my grocery shopping. So it was this strange ritual because it was how I would unwind because I'm antisocial and I didn't have any friends and I was working like 60 hours sometimes. So
you anyway. Had Pizza Friday for yourself.
Yeah. And then I would, you know, I had that fiction that like, oh, I want to eat all this pizza tonight, except I would eat all of the pizza in one night and gorge myself like a pig. So anyway, enough about my shame eating. This was one of those where I had rented it and brought it home and watched it. And it was even the theatrical release, which I got had on DVD, was long. The version we watched, however, was the full release. The full actual
like director's cut
movie, director's cut, which was 3.5 hours long. I remember liking it the first time I watched it. I remember it being something that I think I actually watched it twice because it was so long. I watched it on a Friday night. And I probably was not coherent by the end of it. So I went back and probably watched it again to make sure that I got it. So when I watched it, so it's been, you know, 20 some years since I'd seen it. But watching it again, I was impressed by it. So,
yeah, I think, first of all, this was the first time I've ever seen it. Yeah, I think I heard some bad reviews and just avoided it.
Oh,
thinking it was long. But I enjoyed it. I watched it all in one sitting, mostly because you pretty much dared me to.
I was actually impressed with myself that I sat. I had not intended to sit through it. I had intended to watch like an hour and a half and then go back later and watch the rest of it. But I had gotten so into it when I started watching it that I just went all the way through it.
Yeah, it's a 3.5 hour movie that moves.
It does. It has a lot packed into it. And some of the dramatization and exposition, Oliver Stone admits that there are scenes that are actually condensed just for the purpose of you, the viewer, getting education, when really the situations that transpired in some of those meetings took months and years. But you're getting all of the information in a meeting so that the story moves.
Yeah, we're going to call that 3-month period Larry Hagman.
Well, see also Sam Waterston.
Yes.
But the Sam Waterston, Dick Helms CIA meeting was not in the theatrical release.
Which is amazing to me because it's really kind of a powerful piece.
And creepy as fuck.
Well, yeah. Some parts of this movie that we'll get into it, but there's some parts of this movie where if you don't like Oliver Stone or you're not into it, you're going to call auteur bullshit on some things. And I think like the Sam Waterston thing, which is during this meeting that Richard Nixon has with the director of the CIA, Sam Waterston, his eyes were completely black. And which is really creepy, but I can imagine Drew having an audible eye roll while watching it.
So I went back and watched the 2 hours of Oliver Stone's commentary on the movie. I specifically wanted to see if he mentioned that scene. When or anything about that scene when the scene is played. No. He talks about the war in Laos and Cambodia. Most of his commentary in the first half an hour, he's very circumspect about, well, this was an homage to Citizen Kane and this was a Matt and this was, but then by an hour in, he's like, you know, we killed Cuba's population of pigs with swine flu. And for all I know, that could have been AIDS. And I mean, it just went crazy out of spiraled control.
Yeah. So, you think that if you put a nickel in him, Oliver Stone would tell you some history.
So I was a little frustrated with the commentary. So, and by the way, there's 2 commentary audio tracks and I checked both and he doesn't mention at all. So I don't know.
It's 2 Oliver Stone tracks.
Well, I see. That's the thing. I couldn't tell because I couldn't get any audio in the second version. I was just skipping around.
Yeah.
So I didn't have time to tell. But Oliver Stone did describe that scene, by the way, that it was cat and mouse, but really it was more spider.
Yes.
Because he was setting up in the flowers, and he was. Waiting to snag his prey. So I think that was supposed to be a spider reference, but it seems so out of place in the rest of the context of the movie. It actually took me right out of the movie. I think I texted you because I'm like, that's some X-Files bullshit.
Yes, yes.
And don't get me wrong, I love X-Files. I'm not like, no. But the opening of this movie is a horror movie.
Well, and it's almost comic relief, the black-eyed Sam Waterston.
It is.
Because it's just so evil.
Well, but at the open of this movie, though, the storm clouds and the thunder and lightning and the camera angles and the darkness and the black car that pulls up at the gate and the, you know, sitting in the back of the car very little bit. It was a horror movie. Oh, it was a horror movie. And the music, the first 10 minutes was like a horror film. And I thought, wow, that was really a strange foreshadowing.
It's a thing, this movie. It's definitely got style.
Oh, yeah. It's got lots of stuff. And it's got a huge, again, of course, it's 3.5 hours long. It had a huge cast.
It's got a cast of everybody we like.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I'll get into it more specifically, but in most cases, everybody did a really good job with the acting.
Yeah. Is there anybody that you can single out that you thought was like, nah?
Let's see. I think she was probably asked to do this, but I didn't particularly like Mary Steenburgen's language. It didn't seem natural.
It did seem very it was just out of time with everything else. It was probably accurate, but it was with everybody else around, it just seemed
to be. It was kind of clumsy.
It was.
But I don't blame her for that.
Well, I don't know, except if you've heard her speak, that's kind of how she speaks.
Mary Steenburgen?
So, the clumsy.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay.
Well, think about What's Eating Gilbert Grape.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she's kind of got that clumsy mouth with words, with the speaking.
Okay.
I can't speak about her clumsy mouth with anything else, I'm afraid.
Yeah. So that was the one that jumped out at me. Were there any ones that jumped out at you? Or did you guess correctly?
No, I didn't. I didn't guess correctly. I really didn't notice any real stumbles. I had a hard time with General Cushman's character, the actor who played General Cushman, because he reminded me of Jaws from the James Bond films.
Yes, a little bit.
And so that was a little odd. It was jarring to see Larry Hagman, because I had flashbacks of him from Primary Colors in this role.
Yeah.
So it was a little disconcerting for me to see that.
Well, also because, you know, he's talking to Richard Nixon, but he keeps getting distracted and going, Janie!
Very funny. Very well. Plus, also, I've forgotten the actor's name. The fake Cuban accent with Larry Hagman group. It was like so bad. That was probably the worst. But I have to shout out for Paul Sorvino, who did the best.
I know.
Goddamn Henry Kissinger. Like, it was amazing how well he, what a great cast.
Yes.
Henry Kissinger. Cause he nailed the voice.
A very difficult character. And he was almost unrecognizable as Paul Sorvino.
He looked a lot like Kissinger, and he certainly sounded like Kissinger. It was uncanny.
Yeah, no, I thought so. And I loved seeing Madeline Kahn as Martha Mitchell.
That was also amazing.
Now, have you listened to the podcast Slow Burn?
I have not.
Okay. Slow Burn is, I think, a Slate podcast, but it's all about like the Watergate scandal. But it's not from the perspective of the Washington Post, which was, you know, All the President's Men. It was, right. I think it was from another angle, maybe the New York Times. I can't remember what angle, but it's from a different perspective. But there's a whole episode on Margaret Mitchell, there's a whole episode on Martha Mitchell. And she actually was, to sum up that episode, although again, it's history, she was John Mitchell's wife, but also a social gadfly and really gossipy, but also knew a lot of the gossip columnists and reporters. And so when she saw Howard Hunt's picture in the paper associated with the Watergate burglary, she started talking to her friends and then talking to reporters, and then they tried to shut her up to the point of locking her in a room for like 3 days. And then I think institutionalizing her against her will.
Oh.
And so the story is a little bit tragic, but it's very interesting. So there's a whole episode of Slow Burn on Martha Mitchell that I would highly recommend. But even so, seeing Madeline Kahn was great. Loved it.
I love Madeline Kahn, so seeing her in anything.
Exactly, yeah.
I would watch her.
This was her last role, I think. R.I.P. Madeline Kahn.
Yeah.
So let's just dive in. I don't have a ton of plot notes, so jump in, because you have notes, right?
I have some notes. The plot, it's 3.5 hours. We don't want to go through the plot. But if you know anything about Nixon and impeachment and Watergate and his presidency and his political career and his background, this movie goes through all of it from beginning, his humble beginnings and his missteps and the foils, trials and tribulations. But a lot
of it is just touched on, which I like.
They didn't go in depth. Well, they did some in depth. Like
they mentioned the House Un-American Activities hearings. They mentioned Alger Hiss. They mention, but they didn't mention being governor. they didn't really, they kind of skipped the whole period where he, like, they mentioned Checkers and they show the Checkers speech in a really hilarious way, but they don't really get into it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's incidental to the story that Oliver Stone's trying to tell you. Historically, it has value, but in the context of this movie, it wouldn't have added much. Because this movie was primarily meant, and this is, of course, my opinion, but from my interpretation, this is just a vehicle to show kind of the humanity and ambitions of Nixon and where it went off the rails and how the people around him acted, reacted, and handled him, and how he eventually handled himself. Because, you know, this is, you have All the President's Men, which is a fantastic movie by any stretch of the imagination. There's this movie, which is a fantastic movie as far as I'm concerned. There's Frost Nixon, which is another great movie.
Yes.
Or I think Frank Langella plays Nixon, which, again, Frost Nixon's great. So you have those three things, and that really kind of covers a wide swath. So that's a pretty good swing. So this is a pretty good, in my opinion, it's a pretty good middle ground.
Well, yeah, and as a character study of Nixon, because this is not a historical movie. This is a character study, right?
Right.
And I like the framing device. The framing device is that Nixon is in the White House in December of 1973, and he's drunk and alone. And
so here's the thing, because Oliver Stone points this out. He's neither drunk nor totally drugged, because the way the scene is cut, you actually never see him have more than one or two drinks.
Oh, okay.
So, and Oliver Stone points that out. He said, we weren't calling Nixon a drunk. He drank occasionally, but he rarely drank, so it would affect him. And he took drugs because of his, you know, blood clot and the pain he had. And so he wasn't an addict, but he was mixing drugs and alcohol, but not to any great degree. But it was historical. It did happen.
But it shows him sort of holed up in the White House.
Yes. And the contradiction of running the air conditioner while having a fire.
Yes. And he's all sweaty, because that was one of the hallmarks of Nixon.
That's before Botox.
Yeah. And the fact that he has a resting grump face, but he turns on the Nixon smile, which I thought Anthony Hopkins did pretty well. Like, I was a little concerned about Anthony Hopkins in this role, but I think
he nailed it.
Yeah.
Some of the scenes where he grins and does those winks.
Yeah.
And bare. And, you know, he's just, he did, you know, I didn't realize that Pat Nixon was Canadian. It was just, it was amazing because he really did a great job, I thought. But so June Allen did a great job too.
Oh my God. She was fantastic.
I would like to see a movie just of Pat Nixon where she just plays Pat Nixon.
Yeah. We need to look at other Joan Allen movies. But yeah, okay.
Really? So, like Pleasantville?
Yeah, sure.
I think we already did Pleasantville, didn't we?
Nope.
We didn't?
Yeah, isn't Pleasantville the one with Reese Witherspoon and Toby
McGuire? Yes, Tobey Maguire. Yeah, okay.
Uh-huh. And
maybe that's the one that Drew was like, I hate that movie.
Jeff Daniels, maybe?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So,
I love that movie.
I don't think I've seen it all the way through, so I think we should put it on the calendar for 2021.
I actually... 2021. I think actually it was on the calendar at some point.
Probably.
I feel that someone who didn't like it removed it.
Or shoved it down the line. Because we have a calendar full through this year. All through 2019. So.
Well, hey, I you know, what can I say? Also, to kind of double back, Bagman is a great podcast. So if you're a Nixon fan, Watergate fan, Bagman. Because I had no idea. And I credit you for turning me onto it, and in turn making me also go back to, now I'm daily downloading the Rachel Maddow Show, you bastard.
I know.
So, but Bagman, which has now had over 1 million downloads, according to her.
I think so, like 10 million, right?
Maybe 10 million.
Yeah, I think it is a gigantic number, yeah.
Yeah, she was, I'm humbled by it. Well, I'm like, nah, you have false modesty.
No, but it's a good story. She tells a good story.
She does tell a good story. Also, I had no idea.
No, I know, me either. And this movie doesn't talk about any of the vice presidents. It barely talks about him. Richard Nixon was vice president for 8 years, and it barely mentions it.
They kind of mention Agnew in passing, and then they kind of, you see Johnson kind of, so.
Eisenhower, Ford, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, so, okay, so the framing device is he is sitting down, and he's been delivered by Alexander Haig, as it turns out, played by Powers Booth, who we know as Curly Bill from Tombstone. He does a great job as Al Haig. And you remember, Al Haig nearly, he was like, I think when Reagan was shot, Al Haig was the president for a while because he was Secretary of State.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wonder, where was HW? He was someplace else. So there was a brief moment where Haig was in charge of the country.
A singularly terrifying thought.
Yeah. So Alexander Haig, Powers Booth, delivers Richard Nixon, Anthony Hopkins, who of course we know is Hannibal Lecter, audio tapes for Nixon to listen to. And the two men are kind of discussing the Watergate crisis. And they mention J. Edgar Hoover, which, by the way, Bob Hoskins does a great job as J. Edgar Hoover in this movie.
Mr. Hoover.
And then Nixon uses profanity when discussing John Dean. John Dean was played by David Hyde Pierce, which I thought was a great choice.
Was awesome.
Yeah, because John Dean, I remember listening to G. Gordon Liddy's radio program where he always talked about John Dean as a rat.
Cocksucker.
Yeah. So he talks about the whole Watergate thing. And as Haig turns to leave, Nixon asks him why he hasn't been given a pistol to commit suicide like a good soldier would be. And this is where we see Nixon as, like, throughout this whole movie, Nixon seems, at least in my perspective, just to be a flawed character. He has some good ideas, but he just is a flawed man. And he's also kind of, well, he's haunted by a couple of things.
Well, he's somebody who needed to be loved, and the fact that he's trying to please and nobody loves him makes him all the worse.
Yeah, and it's like from his childhood. Like, he was always second best. Yeah.
Well, and he grew up in a family, and his mother shunned him often because she was caring for his other two dying brothers.
Yeah, well, yeah, and he grew up in a Quaker family, so.
And they were poor.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was his story, was that.
The poorest lemon ranch in Whittier, California.
Yeah, and then. And they managed to sell the property just before oil was discovered on it. But, okay, so then we go where Nixon starts listening to these tapes, and then we flash back. And it's interesting because, of course, you know, the whole history of the tapes, there is that 18.5-minute gap that is not explained. Like, there was, I think a secretary took the fall, right, for saying she must have taped over it.
The story they were shilling, but
yes, but nobody believes it.
No.
So this movie basically tells you that everything you're going to see in this film is contained in that 18 minutes of tape, because the film is framed by him basically listening to this tape and then recording over it. So, we meet, H.R. Haldeman, James Woods, and John Ehrlichman, J.T. Walsh, and John Dean. And they're talking about how this tape is coming out. And then, of course, we flash back to the life, like political life and also personal life. And we have Joan Allen playing Pat Nixon, who's great because Pat Nixon comes off as a pretty strong broad. You know, she wanted a divorce several times. You know, she was sick and tired of him running for office and getting disappointed and maudlin for losing or. Just, and he never saw their kid and, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, he was never happy because he would never win. And so it just cast a pall over their life together. And that's why she wanted to divorce to get away from that. And later in the movie where, you know, he brings in the posse with him and they're all celebrating that he's going to run. And she's like, oh, when were you going to tell me? Huh? And then he's like, ooh. But he turns around and she says, will this make you happy? And he says, yes, you know it will. And then.
Yeah, then she's on board.
And then you get that awkward kiss.
Yeah.
But they, you know, they had fun. They were dancing. So
yeah. Well,
Quakers apparently dance.
Oh yeah. So Madeline Kahn is Martha Mitchell. And she basically is a cameo. She shows up twice, but it's still great. And then E.G. Marshall is John Mitchell, and we know him from Creepshow. We've got Ed Harris, also from Creepshow, as E. Howard Hunt. We've got David Paymer as White House spokesman Ron Ziegler. So like that's I you know, you're looking at all these president movies, you can't help in 2019 to look at them through the lens of who we have as president now.
Mm. I actually wrote something down about that.
Yeah, no matter who we have as president, I think we would still be looking at through those lenses. You know, if we still had Obama as president, we'd still be looking at it through that lens. But in this case, like him physically pushing David Paymer to the podium to say, like, get rid of these people or tell them something to stop talking to me. And yeah, Paul Sorvino does a fantastic job as Henry Kissinger. Just really great.
I was so blown away. I think that's probably the best performance in this whole movie.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. And Kissinger doesn't come off as either a bad guy or a saint.
You don't think he comes off as a bad guy?
He kind of comes off as a bad guy, but he doesn't come off as a villain, you know?
Well, he's not a Bond villain, but I don't think he was a great guy.
No, well, arguably he's not a great guy at all. And yet, just like Nixon, like this film doesn't even really go into like all the successes that Nixon had because he did open up China, you know?
Yeah.
Granted.
But at what cost?
Yeah, cost of Russia. So that's
Laos, Cambodia, Vietnam.
Well, yeah, in Vietnam, getting out of Vietnam, trying to get out with a win, which was turned out to be impossible. And again, you want to see it's funny. I haven't ever seen the movie, or if I did, I only saw it once because I don't want to see it again. But the movie, The Killing Fields, there's Spalding Gray's Swimming to Cambodia, which is about his small role in The Killing Fields. He played assistant to Sam Waterston, actually. And that teaches you a lot of history that you would find valuable coming into this movie about bombing Cambodia and Laos. So we have Sam Waterston as basically the devil. We've got Larry Hagman as a different kind of devil, obviously a composite character of all the Southern white leaders. We've got a familiar face from the time, from 1995, Five-ish Finkel. We've got our buddy Edward Herman as Nelson Rockefeller. We've got Dan Hedaya as Trini Cardoza. And of course, Dan Hedaya actually played Richard Nixon in the movie Dick, the Michelle Williams vehicle. We've got, in lesser roles, we've got George Plimpton as the president's lawyer toward the end. We've got Bei Ling, who we know from Three Extremes, as the Chinese interpreter. We have Bosom Buddy. And turns out, since Dr. Detroit, Mrs. Dan Aykroyd, Donna Dixon as Maureen Dean. We've got John C. McGinley from Scrubs as the actor in the Navy training film that Nixon is also in the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
And we've got Michael Chiklis, who has a small role as a TV director. So the cast is amazing.
No, and that's not even all of it.
No, I just put the highlights in there. I was surprised how it shows him as a deeply flawed human, but it also made him more sympathetic to me. Does that make sense?
Yes. Well, you pity him. You feel bad because he's clearly a sad man who's trying to make his mother love him. And while she probably did, he's never going to realize the love that he wants from her. Of course, you know, she's dead now. So
I don't know whether this is my baggage I bring into this movie, or whether this was sort of a feeling that the movie was intended to give you. I don't know. I guess you'll be the judge of that. But I kind of see Richard Nixon as a guy who was trying to do what he thought was the right thing. But he just, you know, he got caught doing political shenanigans that he shouldn't have done, but other people have probably done.
Yeah, I think he thought that I think he felt that he was doing the right thing. And as long as he was doing the right thing, then the method didn't matter.
Well, and there's the whole thing that is very clear. It's not subtext. It's actual text of Frost Nixon, where his whole opinion that it's not wrong, it's not illegal because the president did it. Like that in itself does it makes it fine. I think our current president has that same thought.
Well, I actually wrote, Nixon's rambling 62 speech reminds me of the Mango Mussolini's Twitter rants.
Yeah. It's fascinating. So what are the notes you shoot it at us? Because, again, it's just a history movie, so I don't have any other real...
I wrote that, you know, Bob Hoskins as Hoover was it's amazing. It was such an odd and jarring thing to see.
Well, it was definitely different than Leo.
Yeah, definitely. So, the meeting with Mao Zedong was bizarre to me. That whole scene and setup.
Yes,
that was clearly an Oliver Stoneism because it was it was off the rails. I don't know what was supposed to be going on, but it was like some drug induced fever dream movie.
Yes, there was a lot of that in this movie.
And I wrote, and so that's really all my notes, because there was too much to write down, and it's all, you know, it's docudrama. So, but I will say Oliver Stone makes gorgeous movies. He really does. And I said at the end, how the hell, after 3.5 hours, I'm not surprised, but how the hell Oliver Stone makes me actually feel bad for Nixon.
Exactly. Yeah.
What the bastard. So,
And what do you think? Did you hear his commentary? What do you think about this whole Bay of Pigs, Richard Nixon feeling responsible for Kennedy's assassination?
Who knows?
Like just another of Stone's conspiracy theories he's throwing out there.
I think probably so. I don't think Nixon felt responsible. He said in the movie, and I, again, no way of knowing if it happened in real life, but he said, you know, no one would have loved Nixon enough to kill him.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is that he referred to himself in the third person. And he, you know, there's one thing about being a guy who's hated, but and this is not something that our current president suffers from, but also being the self-pitying guy. Or maybe we just don't see the self-pitying of our current president.
Oh, I think we see it everywhere.
You think so? But instead of, you don't have Nixon to kick around anymore, I guess that is kind of a Trump thing.
Yeah. Like, I think if you read half of what he, and I don't, but I think if you listen and or read to some of his stuff where he claims that people are terrible and fake, that's a lot of poor me-isms, but...
Well, okay, and so the film ends with his resignation, and then they show I like the way the style of this movie. I like the way how they cut from real news footage and real, like, in some case, like newsreel footage to the actors. But every time they could, they showed the real historical figures on the opposite sides on the other shot. And I thought that worked pretty well, pretty seamlessly, because they did. They matched the black and whites pretty good. They matched the different ages of the color film pretty good. So I thought, especially in 95, that was pretty skillful.
Well, the juxtaposition with JFK at the debate. Yes,
exactly. Yep.
They did a really skillful. They actually used an actor, I guess, for the close up, but they actually used the footage in the far away. So. That was pretty. It was pretty good for the time, considering it was 95. Yeah. So, yeah.
Also, here's a question about history. So, you know, in when did Nixon die? Like 90? I want to say 93, 94, something like that. He died as sort of an exiled statesman. I mean, he wrote a bunch of books afterward. People still sought his advice, I think, or he was sort of polishing his image toward the end of his life. If I remember reading about it at the time, because I was a little news junkie back then too. When our current president dies, there will have to be a state funeral. There will, I'm sure. And who's going to attend?
Lindsey Graham.
I guess.
The evangelicals.
Or maybe the people who are going to attend just to as Elvis Costello might say, tramp the dirt down.
Is that a Margaret Thatcher reference?
Yes.
Yeah. Nixon died April 22nd, day after your birthday, 1994.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and, you know, every living president attended.
Yes.
It was a big deal. And, you know, again.
Yeah, because there was five, because it was Ford, Carter, Clinton, Bush,
Reagan. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a big deal.
Yeah.
But, again, do I think Nixon was a horrible, rotten, awful human being? No. Do I think he was a crook? Yeah. Do I think he did some shady things in the office? Yeah.
For sure.
But do I think any of our other presidents haven't? No.
No, of course not.
I just think Nixon went about it in a way that was
he got caught.
Not even overt. It was just stupid.
Well,
and he
didn't
get caught.
Yeah, but if you listen, it's funny. You know, now that the White House taping system, a whole bunch of the Kennedy tapes are available. A whole bunch of the LBJ tapes were made available just a couple of years ago, and it is amazing. I mean, not just the conversations with LBJ's Taylor about letting out the crotch because he's too well endowed for regular pants, which has got to be in the Woody Harrelson movie. Has to be. We'll find out, won't we? But I doubt there'll be a whole Dirk Diggler scene, but so
karate.
This kind of stuff, this kind of like political talk and shenanigans and the whole, you know, committee to reelect the president and all of the shenanigans that political parties have been doing like since probably time immemorial, you know, cheating around the edges. I think just again, he got caught up in the time too. Like when he went, because you know that scene where he goes down to the Lincoln Memorial and talks mm-hmm. to the protesters.
Yeah,
that actually happened.
Yeah,
like he just showed up and started talking football to these protest kids. Like,
which
like
kind of tells you how out of touch he was.
Yeah, well, and also, you know, the fact that like the whole madman theory was a real deal. Like the whole idea that the communists would be afraid because they just didn't know if Nixon was what he was going to do next. He's a madman.
So to circle back, LBJ is directed by Rob Reiner.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. And Jennifer Jason Leigh is Lady Bird.
Oh, okay.
And you know who plays John F. Kennedy?
Let's see. Hold on. Martin Sheen.
Mr. Hoover.
Martin Sheen.
Jeffrey Donovan.
Oh, okay. Oh,
Mr. Hova. Yeah, I didn't. I've never seen LBJ, so I'm super excited.
Okay, does somebody play Nixon? Who plays Jackie O, or Jackie K, or Jackie B? Actually,
Jackie Kennedy is played by Kim Allen.
Okay,
I don't think I know who she is off the top of my head. You asked who was.
Does anybody play Nixon?
Nixon. How is it possible? There's no Nixon.
Well, you know, if Woody Harrelson is LBJ, then of course Matthew McConaughey should be Nixon.
There's no Nixon.
Huh. Who plays Bobby Kennedy?
Michael Stahl David.
Okay, don't know him.
I'm looking him up.
Who plays Herbert Hoover? Because wasn't who is?
Nope, there ain't no Hoover in LBJ.
Who was his vice president?
Who is Johnson's vice president?
Yeah,
Humphrey.
Oh, Hubert Humphrey. Okay, sorry, got my H's mixed up. That's whatever became of Hubert.
Yes.
How many people here tonight remember Hubert Humphrey? He used to be a senator. From time to time, you read something about him pinning a medal on somebody or making a speech, or every now and then you read something in one of those "Where Are They Now?" columns. Whatever became of Deanna Durbin and Hubert Humphrey and so on. This became quite an issue last winter at the time of Winston Churchill's funeral when President Johnson was too ill to go and somebody suggested that he send Hubert and he said, "Hubert who?" And all America was singing, "Whatever became of Hubert? Has anyone heard a thing? Once he shone on his own, now he sits home alone and waits for the phone to ring. once a fiery liberal spirit. Ah, but now when he speaks, he must clear it. Second fiddle's a hard part, I know, when they don't even give you a bow. We must protest this treatment, Hubert, says each newspaper reader. As someone once remarked to Schubert, take us to your leader. Sorry about that. Whatever became of you, Hubert? We miss you, so tell us, please. Are you sad? Are you cross? Are you gathering moss while you wait for the boss to sneeze? Does Lyndon, recalling when he was VP, say, I'll do unto you like they did unto me? Do you dream about staging a coup? Hubert, what happened to you?
Doug McKeon plays Hubert Humphrey.
Oh. Anyway, let's go back to Nixon here. Any other thoughts about Nixon before we give it a rating?
I don't have any other thoughts about Nixon other than, again, I think it's a great film, but you have to realize, again, it's not a documentary. But if you go into it knowing that it is dramatized, it is a great movie. It's got some great acting on it. It's got good story. It progresses. It jumps back and forth to me very well. The mechanism that Oliver Stone uses to go back and forth.
I agree.
He also does a little bit of mentioning JFK. He does throwbacks to the JFK movie here and there, which is, I thought, a little bit witty, but a little bit egotistical. But for a 3.5-hour movie, you got to do something to entertain yourself.
Well, but Nixon and Kennedy go together like Nixon. Like you can't talk about Kennedy without talking about Nixon and vice versa, right? Even though they're opposites.
Okay.
Oh, come on. Kennedy destroyed his career briefly.
Trounced him. Yeah. No, I gave him a
Nixon
stern thumping.
Maybe actually inadvertently had him assassinated. Because that's another thing that Oliver Stone's touches is you know, Nixon is worried about the Bay of Pigs coming up, even though Nixon himself didn't have anything to do with the Bay of Pigs, but he had to do with covert operations overseas in that area, specifically with Cuba. And so Stone doesn't give you a straight line. He doesn't say that Nixon put in place a thing where the Cubans were going to retaliate by killing the president, or the mafia was going to retaliate by killing the president. He just leaves all the cards on the table and just makes you make, you know, says, hey, where there's smoke, there's fire. And of course, yeah, that's the sort of the MacGuffin, is that Sam Waterston has papers about Nixon that other people wouldn't necessarily have. So he wants those papers destroyed. But, you know, you can't destroy everything.
Yeah. Well, you never know what Hoover has.
Well, exactly. Well, but Hoover died, remember? And actually, Hoover played presidents his entire career at the FBI, in which case, you know, which he's like, oh, yeah, as long as you're useful to me, I've got, you know, again, that file cabinet, right, that nobody has seen the contents of.
Right. Yeah, well, the point is made in the movie. If Hoover hadn't died, the tapes would have never seen the light of day.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah. Again, you can control the investigation if the FBI chief is corrupt also, right?
Or perhaps you could make the case he was just very, very diligently ultra thorough and enthusiastic about his job.
Yeah, or maybe very patriotic.
In his own mind.
Yeah.
I also thought Joan Allen looked a great deal like Pat Nixon.
Oh, she was great. She just was great.
Yeah.
And she stole the show every scene she was in.
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah, it's great. So, yeah. So, how would you rate Nixon?
Nixon's an A movie, as far as I'm concerned. I dare give it an A+, except that it is way too long for that. So I'll just give it an A.
Yeah. I'd probably give it an A-. Frankly, I think JFK is a better movie. But yeah, it was good. It was a nice companion piece.
You do, huh? Because to me, Nixon moved and kept my interest better than JFK did. I liked this story enough that it kept me interested, and I didn't, even with the spider eyes scene, I kept my interest. Where JFK, I had a harder time with.
Yeah.
I think because in JFK there was that fantastical element, where this was less of that fantastical and just more of the drama.
The subjects of Oliver Stone movies, historical movies at least, are never happy with the result. So, you know, we can guarantee that everybody who's portrayed does not like how they are portrayed. Which doesn't mean that they were unfairly treated. But anyway, yeah. Yeah, I thought that was probably an A-, but I liked it a lot. I'm glad we got to talk about it. So, are we on to housekeeping?
Housekeeping!
Do you have any housekeeping?
I do have some housekeeping. I don't know how well it will do without the corresponding audio that goes with it. And I have written down several weeks running to mention this, and I keep forgetting to mention it. So I'm mentioning it now, because otherwise I will forget, because my brain is like a colander at this point.
Okay.
I listen to podcasts on the app Overcast.
Okay.
And as such, I have a setting in it where it kind of squeezes together the pauses and makes the podcast flow a little faster. So it does this weird trick where it compresses the audio together.
And it doesn't speed it up, right? Or does it?
So it speeds it up a little bit in certain places where the audio is, there's pauses. So it just for a fraction of a second, it kind of speeds things up. Almost imperceptible. Except it took me... Well, it took me a year to figure out that it did this. So I went through, and it all started with Serial.
Okay.
And the Adnan Syed case. Because I wanted somebody to listen to, and I started listening to Serial. And the first couple episodes, I thought, I like this podcast, but good God, the audio music on this is crap. Whose idea was this? Because there's a lot of these piano riffs, and it's kind of like... It's like that kind of single piano strikes like chopsticks,
yes.
Right? Except that they were never in the right. It was never a constant. The notes would like run together and back and forth. and I was like, well, that's just like who does that? Why is this a deliberate choice that somebody's creating music that doesn't flow? Like, this is the dumbest thing ever. Like, who thought this was a good? So I'm just like, every time I would hear it would irritate me. So I need to get you the audio so okay. you can understand. So anyway, it took me a while. And then at the end of our podcast with the theme music, when it fades out, the last six or seven notes like suddenly accelerates and speeds up.
Oh,
and I
funny.
Just thought, I thought that was like, oh, that's just a flair Brother E does. And then it dawned on me, oh, it's the app. It's my app that's doing it. Here, I think all of this is somebody else is doing, and it's all me.
It's compressing the pauses in music?
It's compressing the pauses where there are pauses. Not completely out, but just enough to kind of keep things at a kind of a constant clip. But in music, if there's large pauses, the practical effect is that it will actually, when it comes to the first part of some of the notes, it squeezes them together faster.
Hmm.
I'm doing a really terrible job of describing it. When you hear it, you will giggle. I need to figure out how to. I'm just going to play this and see if you can hear it. I don't know if it'll work or not. So yeah.
This works, and every question we've had for the past 8 months, he knows it.
Yeah, I mean, who else did it?
You hear it?
Like, yes. Can you play it regularly?
So you see how I thought, it like, does, fuck yeah. These people.
Exactly.
Okay, let me put it in normal speed.
Yeah, put it in normal speed.
For the past 8 months, he knows it.
Yeah, I mean, who else did it? You know, there's like, run out of suspects.
Serial's produced by Julie.
Okay,
Snyder,
can you play that part again with a... That part again with the compression thing on.
For the past 8 months, he knows it.
Yeah, I mean, who else did it? You know, there's like, run out of suspects.
serials produced by Kelly Snyder.
Yeah, that's just off enough to be really annoying.
Well, and because I was listening to my real with my really good Origin headphones that Brother Drew bought me, like it was so noticeable, and I would just seethe with rage. Like, what audio quality? Like, it just
who lets their cat on the piano while they're playing?
Who is doing their audio proofing? Who is doing their editing? Because it just drove me crazy. And then when I would listen to our podcast, I was like, what? So let's see if I can play the end of ours. Just
oh yeah, okay. Yeah, since we own that one, we can play that all we want.
Sorry. Did you hear it?
It falls speed off up? The cliff in the end.
Yeah. I was like,
it's like the keyboard fell off the stand.
But that's what I'm saying. I thought Eric's a genius because that's brilliant. And then I realized, oh, wait. It's me.
That's so funny.
I have done this to myself. Anyway, I just had to share because when I realized it, I had been so mad for like, I don't know, it's been a year and a half, anyway, however long it's been. Then it was, I just felt like I'm an idiot sometimes. I had to laugh at
that's
myself.
That's so funny. So. I like that. That's but great.
I had to share. I knew because you were the audio editor, I thought you might appreciate some audio humor. So.
Yes, I appreciate that. Thank you.
But so, yeah, but the serial thing, I was so disproportionately angry. It offended me on such primal level because I take pride in how well you edit things. And so I was like, come on. And then I was like, oh, it's not them at all. It's
so funny.
So, let's see what else. I don't, have we spoken? I'm
not
so
since
out
Christmas,
of,
huh?
All right. So we haven't spoken since I returned to Portland. Let's see. I've been sick as a dog for like the last 2 weeks with this death cold.
Oh, that's not good.
Luckily, I didn't get it until I came back to work. It started New Year's Eve and I was sick New Year's Day. And then I didn't. So I'm on vacation for 3.5 weeks. I come back to work for 1 day. We're off for New Year's Day. And then I call in sick the next 2 days. And then I'm off that last day. So I worked like 6 days all of December. My boss is like, man, I want your job. So it was amusing, but I was just deathly ill. And just from a cold, it was killing me.
Yeah.
And the thing was, it wasn't bad enough where I was like flu dying, but it was just enough that I was just tired and felt grouchy. So I've been making home remedies, and I made these little Vicks shower bombs so I could try and breathe. And then after like I made a dozen of those shower bombs, I decided I need not to make those with Vicks anymore because Vicks just makes the bathtub dangerously slick with Vaseline. So I recouped and made some without Vicks with some eucalyptus oil instead. And so now they're just like salt bombs basically. So, so it's been a weird,
oh, I've got questions, though, for you.
But and then Brother Drew drew my name for Christmas, and I got the immersion cooker, an Anova sous vide, and I am enjoying it very much. We have made steak in it, and the steak came out fantastic. I've made both vanilla and chocolate creme brulees in it. We've made egg bites in it, which are like the Costco. I keep saying Costco. I've made egg bites in it, which are like the Starbucks sous vide egg bites, although a little different. So I've been enjoying that a lot. So that's been good. Other than that, I got nothing. So if you have questions.
Well, I was going to ask you about your sous vide machine, but do you address that?
I have a fancy, that's not a fancy, I have a giant container for it, and I bought insulating balls for the top of it.
I was wondering what that was.
Yeah, so those are like some kind of polycarbonate plastic balls that basically keep the heat in, which makes it more efficient.
Yes.
Because if you got a lid, the lid would just sweat and wouldn't necessarily trap heat in very well. These actually do really good, and you can take the tongs and go down into the water and grab. Well, I'm using 4-ounce mason jars to make things in. So like the egg cups are in these 4-ounce jars and the creme brulee are in these 4-ounce jars. So, yeah, it's like basically you're basically almost canning things, cooking them.
Could you make a perfect soft-boiled egg?
Yes.
Okay.
You can actually use the sous vide without containers. You can just put the eggs right in it.
Oh, really?
Additionally, yeah, you just put the eggs in the water bath. Also, you can actually just pasteurize eggs if you want.
Oh.
If you want to ensure that they don't have salmonella, you pasteurize them. So if you want to make cookie dough that you want to eat, pasteurize some eggs.
Oh.
So, and I've got a bunch of recipes now. There's a cookie recipe I'm going to try out. Chocolate chip cookies in it. There's some cake recipes. There's a whole bunch. Pork chops is really what I want to try. Because pork chops dry out really bad, but in a sous vide, by definition, you can't dry anything out in a sous vide because it's sealed. So I'm really, really excited.
And so correct me if I'm wrong. So you figure, okay, I'm going to get a steak, and I can get a steak like 4 inches thick if I want, but I'm going to get a steak, and I'm going to figure out what the right temperature is for what I want. See, I want like a medium rare. So I figure out what the best temperature for that is.
So the best temperature for what you think is not necessarily what you're going to cook it in a sous vide because you're not going to cook it as hot. You're not going to cook it like the 160 degrees that they would want you to. You cook it to like 135 degrees, but you keep it there for 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah.
And that has the practical effect. It has the same effect at 135 degrees for 3 hours as it would as 165 degrees for 20 minutes.
Yeah, I'm not talking about food safety.
No, right. I'm just backing into it. Yeah. But as far as, So it never gets hotter than your optimum temperature desire. And then you just take it out of the sous vide and you let it cool down for 15 minutes or so. And then you sear it in a pan.
Like as hot as you can.
As hot as you can. Yeah. And so you get the steak seared on the outside, but it's perfect on the inside and it's just how you want it. So,
So it's instead amazing. Of having like three layers of doneness, you have like just two, just a shell just outside. And then
you have a crust and then you have the steak.
So theoretically you could actually pop it into a deep fat fryer.
Yes.
Yeah.
And actually some people do that.
Yeah. Interesting. Fascinating.
And actually there is was it Alton Brown actually recommended making hamburgers that way.
Really?
You put them in like a sous vide and you get the hamburgers all where they should be and then you throw them in the deep fryer real fast and then they're done.
Oh, that's amazing.
Because you get instant caramelization and you get that crust, but it doesn't really overcook them. And the enemy there is speed. You want to get it in a blisteringly hot pan. Hot pan, cold oil, instant cook. Yeah. So,
because you've already rendered some of the fat in the sous vide process, right?
Well,
or not?
Not really.
Okay.
I mean, very little of it comes out because you don't ever cook it to a heat where things start to come out. So,
but it certainly breaks down, right? I mean, so it's tender.
Oh, it was tender.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. No, it was amazing. It was. It was restaurant quality.
Sweet.
It was surprising how good it was because I just took Ziploc baggies because I don't have a vacuum sealer. So technically you're supposed to use a vacuum sealer, but you don't have to. But I just used Ziploc baggies and I threw in some fresh herbs and some butter and put in the steak and then I just put it in the water bath and let it go. And it's got a phone app, so my phone says, "Hey, it's time. Your stuff's done." And then I just had butter. Butter is the best thing for beef if you want to sear.
Yeah.
So you just because it caramelizes and it has that whole Maillard reaction.
Yeah.
That was amazing. Derek and boyfriend Jesse were mightily happy with the steaks, and I just bought sirloin. It wasn't even fancy steak, so I'm interested to find a better steak to see how that comes out. Because if the sirloin came out, I mean, it was good. But I imagine a better cut of meat would come out fantastic. But also things like, you can do fish in it. You can do pork chops in it. And so there's lots of things. Vegetables come out differently. Vegetables come out really crisp because you don't really overcook them and you're not steaming them and you're not killing them. So they cook carrots. I want to try some carrots. So
yeah, I'm curious how that would be.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because maybe I like overcooked carrots, though. That's the problem.
Well, I only like carrots. I like carrots in stews and soups when they're mushy.
Uh-huh.
And they take on the flavor of whatever they're with.
Yeah.
Or I like the Alton Brown Krugerrands, yes, which are the, you know, the little coins, yes, with ginger ale and butter in it and cayenne.
Yeah, I agree. I like those too.
I adore those, the glazed carrots. But other than that, I'm not a big carrot fan. Carrots, raw carrots, I find repulsive. Shredded carrots in salad, I think, is just an abomination. Like, why bother? Just don't even.
Oh, that's funny.
But I do use carrots in my stock when I make stock, but that's about the only other purpose.
Huh.
Makes good rabbit food. So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. One podcast talk show, hit the app if you wanna catch the episode. Talk movies, look off on a tangent flow, and maybe ramble. That's the brother Sanderson, so sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away, and listen driving. Man, we're here right now. I was just one movie. Brother J, welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way.